even a warning to introduce you for the speaker to the speaker for tonight. This gentleman I've known for a little over 7 years, and well, leave it to an alcoholic to do it wrong. We'll start back and do it again. And I forgot the lady's name, but I suppose she knows what it is. You're in the right place, lady.
Keep coming back.
Carry on.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris Moore, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
A.K.A. Car Crusher. If I have time, I'll tell you about that. By the way, Doc, before I forget, will you give me the usual finger when my 10 minutes are up? Okay, I have a hard time with time. Well, in case you think I talk funny, I'm from Scotland. Your main speaker is from Ireland. So, you know, I just figured that God sends me along for his ego. You know, it's a sad, sad goddamn state of affairs when an Irishman's got to send a Scotswoman out to warm up the crowd, you know? You know, you don't look like a bunch of drunks. Not one of you. When I first came into this program 10 years ago, I didn't look like a drunk either, and I was going to be goddamned if I was going to be one. I was educated. I had a job, I had a house, and I had a car, and I had a kid that nobody tried to take away from me. And I would come in here and say things like, I'm not one of you, I got degrees. And that old fag over there would say to me, so the thermometer, and you know where they stick that. He'd say things, I'd say things like, well, gosh, you know, I can keep some Drambuie in the house for company. He'd say, you don't keep a loaded 45 under your sink to prove you ain't gonna off yourself. Every time I turned around, you know, that man had something to say to me. It was like my bane of contention, you know. I didn't even want to go to meeting where he was anymore. Weird things happened to me when I drank. Weird things, you know, like I'd call a friend and say, take me, find my car. Where is it? But the wishy-washy car wash, of course. You know, that's where I left it last night. I was practicing good driving habits. 8 hours later, we find my car at Hussad's muffler shop. For God's sake, Chrissy, how could Hussad's muffler shop turn into the wishy-washy car wash? You ever looked upside down with your eyes crossed at Hussad's muffler shop? Yeah. Fun things would happen, too. You know, it wasn't all bad, let's face it. I woke up one morning, freezing cold, on a hard, cold slab, and I thought, my God, he's finally called me to run his kingdom for him. And I knew he had when I felt plastic surrounding my body, my naked body. Oh, God, I put my foot over, and I thought, Jesus, we've got carpeting in this morgue, it ain't going to be too bad, you know, maybe I'm not all the way there yet. After a few moments of pulling myself together and prying my eyes open, I realized I was in my game room on top of the pool table, you know. Next came the next step, which none of you have ever had to go through. You go upstairs, you know, you look to see if anybody's there. Are they talking to me? And if they're not, what have I done? So I looked at my children, and they were smiling and just, you know, happy, and I thought, thank you. I said, anybody want to tell me why I'm in a green garbage bag? Oh, Mom, you had so much fun last night. Everybody just thought you were a hoot. You were the Jolly Green Giant. One thing that happened to me, I had to be down in San Diego at noon. I happened to be an officer of the court. And I had to speak at a law enforcement court investigators convention at 1 o'clock on a particular afternoon. The only problem was, I was impounded up until about half an hour before I was to get to the airport and catch my plane, you know, and it was like, bottom line, just tell me how much to get out of this joint. I got to go to a law enforcement convention. $20,000 bail lady. I thought, oh my God, you know. Me, I got a little drinky boo problem, and I decided to come into AA, as I said, about 5 years ago, but I didn't have any living problems, thank you very much. No, weird things happen when I drink. So I came in and met guys like him, you know, who told me, if you're a diabetic, you don't call another diabetic over and bring 5 buns of sugar and have a party. And I thought, what the hell does that have to do with anything? Yeah. This is weird. And then you talked. You know, well, I'm so grateful I got a good space under the I Street Bridge tonight, and I don't have to go to jail. God, I never slept under the I Street Bridge, at least not that I remember, you know. Talked about sleeping in your cars. Well, I did that, but usually it was in my driveway, and it was a Porsche. You know, gee, big deal. You know, it was gratitude stuff. You gotta be kidding, you know. I Skid Row didn't sound good to me. I went straight to Suicide City. Thank you very much. I did not want to go to Skid Row. I refused. Consequently, the inevitable happened. You know, after I took the steps two or three times and graduated with honors with an A, you know, I realized I had to come back. What was happening was lights were going on, warning lights. Chris, this is not normal. Chris, this is not good. Chris, get out of there before you get in trouble. Chris, get out of here before you die. And instead of shooting the damn things out, I started paying attention. And I started realizing, and this is what my message is, that God will sometimes be the only power that can do for you what you cannot do for yourself. I went to Scotland and Paris and London and all over Canada about a year ago, and it was absolutely fantastic. I realized that we are a family thousands of miles away from here. At your local meeting, we are all the same, no matter what language you speak. But on the way back, you ever been on a plane, on an Air Canada plane with a bunch of Scots and Canadians, and the booze is free all the way from Scotland to Halifax? Holy shit. I am here to tell you, you know, when they talk about getting out of slippery places, jumping out a frickin' plane at 5,000 feet without a chute is not a good idea. God is what got me through that flight. I get on the plane, and I'm all set to read my magazine, you know, and the steward comes up and he says, "Would you like a drink?" "You want the pilot to keep flying the plane?" A little while later, he comes back. "You want a drink? You want to be wearing your clothes when we land?" You're slow, but that's all right. Anyway, right behind me, there's this old guy, you know, who's on about his 10th, cooch or whatever you want to call it. And it's been so long since I drank. Not only am I fired hazard, I forget what they call it. He's snockered. He's trying to set fire to his chair with a butt of his cigarette. He's doing perverse things to the back of my hair. He's trying to, you know, I wouldn't drink it, so he's trying to make my coat wear whatever was in his glass, you know, and I'm just, whoa. Finally, we get to Halifax, and they all fall off. And, God, you know, get me out of this one. You know, my higher power, you know, like, get me out of this one. You know, you got it. You know, I don't know what I'm doing here. If I get to Toronto, it's going to be a miracle. So I move my seat up to a fresh, clean seat that doesn't have booze seeping out of it every time I sit down. And I'm sitting next to a fairly nice-looking fellow, you know, and he's having his little toddy, and, "Hello, how are you?" And we say the amenities, and where are you going, what are you doing? And to cut a long story short, he was on his way to Toronto to see his sister who thought he had a drinking problem. Yeah, you're at it again, you know, you're at it again. I said, "Oh." I said, "Well, what makes you think you got a drinking problem?" "Oh, well, I've been bleeding from both ends." I said, "Oh." I said, "Do you think normal drinkers bleed from both ends?" And he says, "What do you mean?" He said, "I'm not one of those." And I said, "One of what?" He said, "You know, one of those." I said, "No, I don't know." He said, "You know, one of those alcoholics." And I looked it over at him and I said, "Oh." I said, "Do you know what that is?" And I showed him a little sign here and he said, "No, but it's very pretty." And I looked at him and I said, "I am one of those." That's a true story. And I firmly believe, seriously, that that was my higher power at work for me. I have no idea if that fella got off the plane and went to an AA meeting, and I don't care. Because I knew that my higher power was with me right there, giving and doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I just like to say, remember, alcohol is a cunning, baffling disease of denial. The woman standing at the graveyard, burying her man, and an old friend comes up and says to her, "Oh, what a shame about Joey. What did he die of?" She said, "Oh, it was the booze that killed him. He said, oh, did he ever think about going to AA? She said, oh, no, it wasn't that bad.
Thank you. I'll try again to get this right. You see why one of our traditions is it will never be organized. Can you imagine what it would be like if it was organized? I'd like to take the opportunity and the privilege and the duty and whatever I can use to describe our speaker, my friend Doc.
I'm Doc. I'm an alcoholic. Good to see a lot of faces I know, a lot of faces I don't know. I do want to tell Marie congratulations to all of you, of course, but especially my dear friend Marie with 13 years, and to remind her that the 14th is a bitch. Whenever I do these things, I always throw in a disclaimer. And that disclaimer is this. I won't be talking about drugs. And there's two reasons for that. One is that this is the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the primary purpose of which is to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And we must guard the sanctity of the primary purpose of AA, or it will self-destruct. Not that I don't recognize totally the problem of other kinds. In fact, I started in Sacramento a new group called AFTA, which might interest some of you. It's any friggin' thing anonymous. Ding-dongs, peanut brittle, the newest one, Impotence Anonymous, you heard of that? That kind of cracked me up. I don't know what the hell they do at their meetings. I suppose they sit around trying to put marshmallows into piggy banks. The second reason I won't be talking about drugs is because I don't know a damn thing about them. Besides, you druggers haven't got any class. Hey, you steal $2,000 worth of stereos to cram $200 worth of blow up your nose. And I can show you how to die for 36 cents a day. Chris, my dear friend, is from Scotland. It's not her fault. I was born in a small community in Ireland called Skibbereen. I bumped into the first person I've ever met here, who's somebody, a mother or something from Skibbereen. But then all a Scotman is a Irishman that can't swim. I would give anything in the world to know what the hell I was going to talk about. Going back to the other... There's one thing about it. You know, I realize that most of the people in here have double trouble. I realize that. But I'm not going to talk about it. Besides, one thing you dopers got going for you, you don't have to deal with old goats like me. And the reason you don't is the dopers don't get old. I But what I am going to do is to talk about alcoholism starting right now. You know, it is said that we have, many, many years ago, 32 years next August, that's when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I haven't been drunk for well over 20 years, and I owe it all to not drinking. Thirty-two years ago, I'll never forget the guy that said this. He says, if you are going to admit that you are an alcoholic... Hello, sweetheart. God damn, I can't... How are you? You married? Wanna be? Check with me after the meeting. We'll work something out. He says, if you're going to admit you're an alcoholic, maybe you ought to know what the hell you're admitting to. And that didn't make any sense then, but it does now. The second thing that sticks out in my mind in Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard just a few years ago. And it was from an old-timer, a word I don't like, old-timer, I don't even know what they are. I went to a meeting up there, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the subject was old-timers, for God's sake. And it was a general consensus of opinion there that they didn't like them. And I could understand that. And then they called on me. And I said, gee, I'm awfully sorry you don't like old-timers, but tell me, please, what are you going to do to keep from being one? I screwed that meeting up. See, that's what I do. I don't have resentments. I am the North California distributor. And there is not one son of a bitch in the universe that's going to make it on AA until they can tolerate Doc John. So anyhow, this old-timer opened the meeting, thumping on the table, the meeting's open, and he says, unfortunately, he said, most of the people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous today are not through drinking. And I said to myself, God, what a thing to say. And it made me mad. It truly did. And I was mad the next day. And then I figured out why I was mad, because it took me 7 years to figure out that Alcoholics Anonymous wanted you to quit altogether. And secondly, it made me mad because I could not prove him wrong. Now, if that makes the new people in here angry, I didn't say it, he did. I'm just passing it along. But remember this. If you're going to admit you're an alcoholic, for God's sake, know what the hell you're admitting to. Because if you don't, you're going to die. You're going to die. You know, we call Alcoholics Anonymous, or alcoholism, I mean, a disease. The great white tower of the physicians were good enough to tell us in 1946 that it was a disease. First of all, what the hell's a disease? Now, check this out. I went to med school. And I studied pathology, and the teacher told us what a disease was. He said, a disease is any variance from normal to the point of abnormality. And I have no idea what that means, do you? Zero. I have no idea what that means. But I will tell you this, as far as alcoholism is concerned, you could damn sure go back a long ways before 1946. I'll bet you that the first alcoholic was a caveman that didn't eat all the berries he picked that day. He throws them in a goat bag, comes back in a week, the son had done his work. Wappo, instant wino. I know damn well Adam was an alcoholic. Think about it. God said, Adam, why did you eat of the fruit? What did he say? He says, the woman thou hast sent me made me eat of the fruit. The first printed indication is in the books of the Republic by Plato, 385 years before Christ, when it says that Crito could not attend the wedding of Socrates, not the wedding, the trial of Socrates, because he had been poisoned by the acid of the grape. That cat was a wino. We know Christopher Columbus was an alky, don't we? Took off, didn't know where he was going. When he got there, didn't know where the hell he was. And a woman financed the whole trip. That great man that wandered around the Sea of Galilee in the year 33, whom, regardless of your religion or lack of it, we all will admit was a pretty good egg. I see it nowhere written that the first miracle at the wedding of Cana, I see it nowhere written that he turned that water into cocaine or Kool-Aid. Wine. See, you dopers got no class. You don't even have to steal a bicycle to get a Mickey of wine. Do you, Arnie? In vino veritas est. That's Latin. It means in wine there's truth. Speaking of wine, there's a cooking show every Saturday. Narcy David. See a few heads nodding. I enjoy it because I enjoy cooking. And invariably, somebody will call in. It's a talk show. Somebody will call in and says, Narcy, I just got this bottle of five-year-old Chateau Bing Bong Bang. I don't even know. I can't even pronounce it. He says, should I drink it now? Or should I let it age another 5 years? Are you kidding me? That stuff was ready yesterday. Tuesday was a very good year. Well, that's enough history. The point I guess I'm trying to make is we don't have to bow our head. We walk in pretty deep grass with a lot of famous people in this world. Oh, I gotta name my favorite, though. W.C. Fields. They asked him one day, what's the first thing you do in the morning? He says, vomit, don't everybody? They caught him in his dressing room one time reading the Bible. I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for loopholes. So anyhow, I don't know what got me carried away on that, but anyhow, so alcoholism is a disease. But boy, is it ever one that we don't pay a hell of a lot of attention to. It's a disease that insists we don't got it. And new people, I hope to God booze got you here. And I'm going to tell you why. If booze didn't get you here, you ain't going to stay here. Period. Now, of course, it might be here that you found out that booze brought you here. And that, I suppose, is the miracle of AA. Now, you'll remember, I told you I just didn't march one day into Alcoholics Anonymous because things were going so good. I don't think many people do. I have never met a person in my life that got up on a beautiful day with the sun out and the bird chirping and said, God, it's a great day. I feel so good, I'm going down to join AA. You know, I didn't come here to get my... to stop drinking. Truly, I didn't. I came here to get my wife back. Gives you some idea how sick I was. And I'm sure she felt the same. And because Alcoholics Anonymous carries the power it does, I got my wife back. No reason to stay sober now, huh? I was sober for a whole year. A whole year. And one day, a guy said to me, "You don't drink anymore, do you, John?" And I spent 30 minutes telling him no. That sound like an alky? Ask him for the time and tell you how to fix a watch. He says, "You're a hell of a man." And I went out and celebrated my manhood. Now, I'm getting a little ahead of myself because there's three things I want to point out, and they're real simple, and I hope to God that somebody here that is fairly new pays attention to them, as I did not. You know, there's all kinds of symptoms that you could have cashed in on Alcoholics Anonymous long ago if you'd have paid any attention to them all. You know, people say that alcoholism is an unpredictable disease. That's crap. There has never been a disease, never in the history of man, that is more predictable than alcoholism. Because any alcoholic that returns to drinking, we know exactly where he's going to go, step by step by step by step. We know exactly what is going to happen. And yet, we can't get new people to believe us. I don't know why. I'll give you a piece of useless information. Think back in your days of drinking. This is useless information, as most of it has been up to this point. Did you know that a social drinker never gulps? Any of you people ever gulp? Is there anybody here that can tell me that he could drink slow enough to be the last one done? Not on your life. God forbid, I don't know what would happen if they didn't have at least one social drinker with them. That'd be a race to the bloody finish, wouldn't it? There's all kinds of simple... Do you ever lie about your drinking? I was married to a brilliant bitch. Oh, come on. She's the mother of my children. I don't say that unless it gets a laugh. I would get snockered and come home drunk and open the door where she would meet me and make this brilliant statement. "You're drunk." And I said, I knew that. "No, I'm not." I was as bad as a guy that came home one time, he couldn't get the key in the lock. He's got a pint on his hip. He's staggering around, he falls backwards, he falls on the pint, he breaks it, he cut himself up pretty good. "Hey, cheer up." He cut himself up pretty good. He finally got in the house, snuck up to the bathroom, and now he's trying to patch himself up by looking in the mirror and slapping Band-Aids on himself. Following morning, he comes down. His wife greets him. He comes down, his hair hurting, his teeth itching. She said to him, "Were you drunk last night?" He says, "No." She says, "Then would you mind telling me what all those Band-Aids are doing on the bathroom mirror?" We all know about the further symptoms of black. Anybody here ever have a blackout? Right down here in Fairfield, a gal came to me and says, "I've never had a blackout." I says, "Yes, you have. You just don't remember them." You know, like the guy that got drunk down in Santa Cruz here when the earthquake hit. He's been down there 2 weeks, 3 weeks in the same motel. He looks outside, the buildings are falling down, the trees are falling down. He said, holy Christ, it's going to take me a year to pay for this one. The day I thought maybe I might be having trouble with booze was the day that I had a losing battle with a barstool in the Elks Club in John Day, Oregon. Now, I wasn't used to that, and I figured, well, what I'll do is cut back or something. And so I occasioned to go to the priest. That's what we Irish do, you know, they have the power. They open umbrellas and all kinds of good shit. So I went to the priest and I said to him, I may be having a bit of a problem with alcohol. He says, well, son, we Irish have a tendency that way. He says, I suggest you quit. What kind of crap is that? That was my first stab, but the point I'm trying to make to new people is I tried quitting and could not. I tried quitting and could not. Now my next step kind of indicated to me that I might be getting a little further in trouble. I was the only oral surgeon. I got out of medical school when I learned they don't get off at 5. And I became an oral surgeon. I was doing oral surgeon, the only one in 3 counties in the state of Oregon, in the Bend, Madras, Redmond area. One day, a lady came to me with a rather severe third molar impaction on a Monday, which was stupid. Damn. She got in my chair. She said, I'd rather have a baby than go through this. I said, make up your mind before I adjust the chair. So anyhow, I filled up a stomach pump full of Novocaine and got a gallon or two in the general area I was going to work, catching her between jitters, and her brother came in, and that's the guy I was drunk with for 3 days. He says, John, let's go down to the Shangri-La and have a cup of coffee. Well, my sister gets numb. I says, right. Now, does the Shangri-La sound like a coffee shop to you? We went down to the Shangri-La to get a cup of coffee while the sister got numb 33 years ago, and I ain't been back since. As far as I know, she's still sitting there. Though they may have repossessed her along with the equipment. My second crack was to go to the medical profession. Now, mind you, I hadn't heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to a doctor. He says, I was an alcoholic. I says, goodbye, and changed doctors. I finally found one that made sense. He said to me, all you got to do is take a drink or two in the evening, no more, just to relax. And I stayed with him for a long time. So the medical profession did not work, at least for me. The medical profession could not help me. So a little later on, and all the time I'm drinking, of course, I finally wind up in a gut laundry. First I went to a couch doctor. Seemed like the thing to do, and that was an experience. I gotta tell you, I figure anybody that wants to be a psychiatrist needs one. He says, your problem is you don't know who you are. And I said, bullshit. I do too. He says, no, you don't. I don't? No. $100, please. I said, what are we going to do about it? We're going to find out who we are. How are we going to do that? Well, I don't know. You will find out who you are. Hey, wait a minute, I said. Hold it right there. If you don't know who I am, and I don't know who I am, hell, man, maybe I'm you. Maybe you owe me $100. Psychiatry was unable to help me in any way. Not that all of these good people, priests, doctors, and psychiatrists, would not have liked to have helped me. But you see, alcoholics don't really want help. And the problem is, a lot of times nowadays, even after they get to AA. And we got to get someone walking out here. My record is 8. And 3's my average. So there I am, along with the human power of a priest, the human power of a psychiatrist, the human power of the medical profession and all of its tools, and I could not stop drinking. And personal power wouldn't. Now I went to a gut laundry. We didn't have these spin dry joints there. We call them treatment centers. You're going to have to forgive me, but I still say $10,000 is too much to pay for a big book. So I went to this thing called Raleigh Hills. And they're going to teach me how to throw up. Are you ready for that? A art of which I was extremely proficient. They asked me if I had a weak stomach. I said, hell no, I can throw up as far as the next guy. But when I got there, I was coming down off of booze, and they handed me a double hooker of hooch. And they says, I want you to drink this. We don't want you going into DTs. I says, no, I couldn't do that. I'd have broke her arm if she'd have moved a step. So I took the double hooker and I went into the bathroom out of her vision. And there was a glass on the sink and I filled it full of water. And then I hit the double hooker, threw the water in the toilet, at the same time went, ugh! She says, you gotta keep it down. I says, right. So the gut laundry was unable to meet my needs. So I have one more human power that ain't working so good. Now all of a sudden I'm in Eugene, Oregon with about $100,000 in the bank and not a penny in my pocket. Well, that's... I say, what's wrong with this picture? I had just won the Oregon Open. Or was that the day I was a ship captain? Or something. Brain surgeon, maybe. I was driving across the Ferry Street Bridge in Eugene, Oregon. Two bridges were coming at me, and I moved over to let one by. And that represented something like my 10th total. I walked down to the bar on Willamette Street, and the Eugene Register Guard was open. That's their paper there. To the want ads. Apparently, somebody was looking for a job. Poor unknowing traps. My eyes fell. I had 10 cents. Or nickel. Whatever a short beer was in those days, I don't remember. My eyes fell on an ad. Drinking problem, call blah, blah, blah. Now I got a choice. I can go in and have a short beer, which is going to do absolutely no good at all. And since the banks were closed, that was it. Or I knew enough about medicine to realize that anybody with any common sense is not going to let a drunk come down without tapering him off. And therefore, whoever wrote that ad had got to have a gun somewhere. And I dropped the coin in the phone and made the call, and they answered it Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't even know what I'm talking about. I hadn't heard of it till then. And I says, now, I kind of might have a drinking problem. I don't know. Now, there's no hurry about this. Take your time. And all I heard was a click. I says, I'm down here at the bar. And all I heard was a click, and in 5 minutes, they were there. I says, what the hell is that? They took me back to their house, and a guy by the name of George Buckley, who wound up being called Silent George, because that man never shut up a day in his life, he started talking, and he yacked, 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 and I'm dying, when's the jug coming? No jug, yak, yak, yak. Now, I'd have done almost anything to get away from this dude. We're sitting at a kitchen table. He's doing all the yakking, and every time he'd yak, I'd jerk. Finally, thanks be to God, he took me up on the third floor and threw me in a room, and I walked in a room and hit a light bulb right on the nose. I laid down in a bed that they brought over on the Mayflower, and he threw that dumb book at me, and he says, I'll see you in the morning if you live. And that was my treatment center. To help get through the night, I read the book. At least I think I did. And by morning, I had taken the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous perfectly. I got back to Portland, and now I'm caught up, and I'm almost through. If you believe that, we got this land down in Florida. And when I hit, and this is going to be for new people, the old timers can, you might as well not come. You've heard me before. I went to the businessman's club there, the Alno Club. Good, got four to go. Now, Will Rogers said, I have never met a man I didn't like. This guy by the name of Josh Hagan walks up to me and he says, Doc, Will Rogers never met you, did he? And he looked me right in the eye, and I'm sober for about 30 days, and he said to me, John, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you straight, and I don't think you're going to hear me, but please try. He says, don't dick around with AA. Do not play games with this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I says, okay. He says, and I'm going to tell you why. If you play games with AA and fall for the fact that the only thing you have to do is go to meetings and everything, you may return to drinking. And if you do, you may stay out there quite a while. And if you do that, the booze will make a 12-step call on you that no human being ever could. And will bring you to your knees until you will either want off of the face of the earth or to get out from under the drinking. And if that happens, you will cry out one day for help. Help me. The guy comes along and says, why don't you try AA? He says, I tried AA 5 years ago or whatever, and it didn't work for me. Any of you ever heard that? It didn't work for me. Now I'd like to see a show of hands. If it doesn't work in Alcoholics Anonymous, would you please tell me where you're going to send them now? I got no answer. New people, this is the last house on the block. It does not work here. For most of us, it will not work anywhere. And that has been proven over and over and over in the 55 years we've been in business. So what is my primary message? Don't play games with AA. Don't do it. Don't cloud it all up with a bunch of psychobabble. It was in this very town, rather Fairfield, that the guy says, or the gal, I don't remember which, I gotta get my feelings, no, what the hell was it? I gotta get my emotions up front so I can get behind them. Now, I don't know what that means. I've been trying to figure that out for 10 years. What the hell does that mean? I gotta get my emotions up front so I can get behind them. I don't know. So anyhow, I stayed sober a year. Told you what happened. Guy says you don't drink anymore. You're a good man. I went out and celebrated my manhood and then stayed. But I guess I didn't cover the territory because now I had it all figured out in the second time what I didn't do in the first time, so I wouldn't have to do it in the third time, and on with all the psychological crap that God ever made, still being the big shot doctor person who nobody can tell anything. And if new people cannot be taught, they will not make it here. You know, they tell the story about the, you know, it's easy to tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them a hell of a lot. They tell you, you know, this alcoholic's behind this blacksmith. He's making a horseshoe, and the blacksmith, of course, tell him how to do it, right? Hell yes, right. And finally, the blacksmith, he got tired of this crap. He reached in the forge, grabbed the horseshoe, handed it to the alky. The alky grabbed it and threw it away pretty fast. Blacksmith says, what's the matter, burn you? Alky says, hell no, don't take me long to look at a horseshoe. So at this stage of the game, I made the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. I went to a guy by the name of Okie Bob. Now, Okie Bob came in here with yellow tennis shoes and a rusty zipper. He was 10 years sober. He still had chili on his chin. But this dude knew how not to drink. Damn, he knew how not to drink. And you know what? I figured he's the easiest and best guy I can think of to go to find out what I was doing wrong. I didn't know what I was doing wrong. And so I explained to him about how I had done this and wouldn't have to anymore and how I'd done that. The psychological reason for this and that and this and that. And oh boy, it was a hell of a talk. I got a lot out of it. And when I was all through, I made the mistake of my life. I says, Okie, what do you think? Then he told me exactly what he thought. He says, I'm going to tell you something, Hoosier. You got drunk the first time and the second time and last time, and you're going to get drunk the next time for all the same reasons. Because you wanted to, and he walked off. And I stood there like an outboard motor, but. And he was right. Because I had to go back and finish it up. And what did I do to finish it up? I'll tell you what. I went to the filth and rot of Skid Row where there's no hope without dope and everything's okay with toke. And then I taught myself very much to be teachable. And I was down there a long time and I reached a point where I wanted out. I just wanted out. Death would have been a welcome thing, but I couldn't seem to die. And I couldn't live. And you got to do one or the other. And I'll tell you what saved my life. At that point in time, however, Alcoholics Anonymous, now remember, I had gone the previous 5 years to at least 300, 400, 500, 600 meetings. We didn't go to a meeting a day in those days. They didn't have a meeting a day. Good God, if they'd have said go to 90 meetings in 90 days, it'd take you 2.5 years, for God's sake. But after all of those meetings, it never even occurred to me. Never occurred to me. Remember what Josh said? If Alcoholics Anonymous don't work for you, where are you going to go now? I went into a tire store. They sell retreads. We know about those, don't we? There was a sign on the wall. And it saved my life. and you won't find it in the big book. And that sign said simply this: we cannot guarantee a retread on an old carcass. And it scared me to death, and I got back, and I haven't had a drink since that time. But when I finally got back, I still had a little bit of in me. I knew there was something to do with sponsors. 5 minutes, kids. Hang on. I knew something about it. I never had bothered with one. I, a doctor person, should have a sponsor. So I did. I got myself a sponsor. And I went right up to him and I says, "Ed, I am my worst enemy." And he said to me, "Not as long as I'm alive, you're not." And walked away. They did an awful lot of walking away in those days. I picked him for my sponsor. And I went to him with my problems. See, that's what we're taught here very early, isn't it? Have problems. My God, if there's no crisis, for Christ's sake, create one. That's what a sponsor's for, to wake up at 4:30 in the morning. To try and figure out why it is that I had this feeling. He would, instead of answering me, he would take the big book, open it, and say, "I won't tell you, but I'll read it to you." Now, I hadn't seen that puppy that close since 7 years previous when I was in the third floor down there in Eugene I was telling you about. And he would read me the answer out of the big book. And I'd say, "Thank you very much, and I'd be back in 3 hours. Here's my problem. I won't tell you, but I'll read it to you. And thank you very much. I won't tell you, but I'll read it to you. I was back in 4 days. I won't tell you, but I'll read it to you." God, this kept up for about 6 months. Finally, I, believe it or not, ran out of problems. New people, did you know you could do that? I flat ran out of problems, and wanting badly to please my sponsor, I made some up. Now, after about a year, here's my problem. I won't tell you. I'll read it to you. He grabbed that dumb book, had a red cover, never forget it. And now he's reading me answers to problems I don't even got. This went on and on and on. In fact, it went on for 5 years. I kept not drinking. He kept reading out of this damn book. Now then, one day, my son, who is now coming up 32, had run off from his mother and came to me, and that, to me, required attention, because I had no idea about how to be a father. I was rather, by that time, you know, I had reached the point where I knew that marriage was an agreement between two people, a girl and her mother. And I was having a great deal of difficulty knowing anything about fatherhood because I hadn't been. That poor lady had to do that job. So I go to Ed. He says, "I won't tell you, but I'll read it to you." And I stopped him in midair. I says, "Ed, I've listened to all of that crap I'm going to hear. For 5 years now, 5 years, I've been coming to you with my problems. For 5 years, all you've been doing is taking that stinking book and say, 'I won't tell you, but I'll read it to you.' Ed, I can do that. Now you're getting the idea." I turned book person and have never ceased to be so. Because remember, new people, do not buy the myth that is modern in this AA. And that myth goes like this: all you gotta do on AA is don't drink and go to meetings. That is crap. Now, don't get me wrong. Meetings are a very important sum total of the whole. But that, and that alone, and 50 cents, will probably buy you a cup of coffee. Unless by this time you're on Skid Row trying to get 36 cents together. And don't kid yourself. There ain't anybody in here closer to Skid Row than they think they are. My own history proves that. So, let's get away from this fact that the only thing we have to do is go to meetings. And I'll quit with this. I was still heading on the Deschutes River. It was in the middle of August. I am a very good fly fisherman, thanks be to God, and the fact I own a fly rod now. Who'd have ever thought the day would come I can tie my own flies? And I have a steelhead on each hip. And I got waders on, suicide pants, they're commonly known as. And I was dying of thirst. I wanted something wet in my body. The body does do that. It's called thirst. I went back to the camp, very happy and contented, except I was thirsty. Now, you don't drink the Deschutes River, because if you do, you get the Johnny Quick Steps. And my partner had left the desert bag up on the Jeep. Now, this is an inaccessible area we're talking about here. The only other way you get in there is with a jet boat. A jet pulled in, and it was a guide, and he says, "May my party eat lunch in your camp." Courtesy of the river, of course. Now, mind you, I'm 10 years sober when this is going on. They pulled an igloo out of the boat and cracked the top of that puppy. And out of the sparkling ice that they had just picked up at the mouth, crawled the heads, slowly but surely, of a half a dozen cans of Olympia beer. With the nice cold water running down it, you know. And I looked down like the angels had blessed me. And I said, 3.2... can't hurt me. And God said, "Bull." And I took off for the desert bag. But the strange thing is, as I was on my way to the desert bag, I looked under cow piles, I looked in the sagebrush, I looked up the river, I looked down the river, I looked everywhere. And you know something? I never saw a meeting anywhere. And I damn sure didn't see a guy crawling over the rim rock with a pot of coffee and a dozen donuts. Do not think that there will not be a time when you will have no human defense, just like Chris in that airplane ride, against the first drink. And preparation has got to be made now. If you don't make it now, tell me when. Tell me when. So, that's the end of this gentleman's story. I am so glad to see you all. And for the new people, I just say this. Do you want to stop drinking? And it's now too soon. Thank you.